This is the place where we discuss the basic elements of karma and how our everyday actions affect our karmic paths. Each week we talk about different stories, different books that we've written, and that the sale of the proceeds of the sales of these books goes to support the podcast that you listen to. This is a great time of year to read some excerpts from these to maybe give you some gift ideas. This week we're reading an excerpt from Ghost Stories from the Ghost's Point of View, and Tina is going to be reading the story, The Acting Couch, and this comes from Volume 3.
Hollywood is frequented by untold numbers of emotionally empty, desperate souls seeking the limelight. Yet the light they seek can never be found in the studios, production backlots, stage spotlights, movie theaters, or television studios they endlessly haunt. There are thousands of ghosts patrolling the sidewalks of embedded stars, moving in and out of seedy bars that line Sunset and Vine, seeking that last desperate sip of whiskey or that last hope of fame. Other ghosts are stuck in the decades-old homes that elegantly grace Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Los Feliz, and the Hollywood Hills. They also fill the less glamorous condos, bungalows, and apartments throughout Hollywood and the greater Los Angeles areas. The cinematic ghosts of Hollywood have so colorfully lit up the silver screen. These do not hold a candle to the apparitions who constantly frequent the homes of the living, looking for help or perhaps recognition. However, there are other ghosts, those unexpected souls who have no idea that they are in an empty city of dreams, and although they may be trapped in a different dimension, they still want their most basic dream to come true. Perhaps my level of insight made me rather wistful as I agreed to help my new clients who live not too far from Hollywood Boulevard. Hi, Tina. Conrad and I got this newly renovated condo, and we need you to look at it. Since we moved in, things have not been the same between us. We love each other, but we fight all the time. Both of us feel off, you know? Like something is terribly out of balance and we just can't make it right. Oh, and we feel sad. Sometimes we feel nauseated with stomach pains for no reason. And then suddenly the pain is gone. This condo is so weird. Conrad has agreed with your remote viewing. He feels all this peculiar stuff too. Sure, Julie, I'll be glad to look around and see what I can do. Is there anything else you want to share? And at the same time, not give me too much detail. I don't want to find it because you already told me it was there. Well, we seem to be having a constant problem with that nagging sense that there is someone here. That shadow out of the corner of your eye never seems to be gone. Okay, thanks. Time to get to work. Even before I began, I also felt a sickening and oppressive sense of sadness that seemed to cloud the edges of my moments right before I began the remote view. I could feel something unseen, but not unfelt, something that needed resolution and an unusual level of compassion. I had no sooner started working on this condo when I saw her standing there, complaining to no one in particular about how unhappy she was with her life. She seemed to notice me immediately. "Have you come to help me get a part? Are you an agent? How did you hear about me? I guess you already know that my name is Belle Lawrence." It's nice to meet you, Belle." She may have never had an acting part, may never have had her name known by anyone other than her landlord, but her presence could easily be felt even 75 years after she left that space. She was old, perhaps in her late 60s when she presented herself to me, but that actress aspect never left her personality. Her dream kept her in this apartment. "I'm not exactly the kind of agent you're looking for or thinking of, but I can help you. I do represent someone pretty high up. Is Belle your real name? No, I made up that name so I could look good up there on that big screen in them movie houses. I wanted my family to see that I did come to some good. My daddy said I would always come to no good. But that ain't true. I could have made it. I know it. I could hear her, almost as if she turned away from me and began talking to herself again, as if she was still pacing the floor of what would have been then her apartment. Belle, can you tell me what happened to you in this apartment? Did you ever get any acting parts? Help me, please. I don't understand. How come there was always a couch in the producer's office? How come my acting ability, pretty face and body, weren't enough for that producer or director to know that I could act the part, do the job, hit my marks, know my lines? All I wanted to do was to be in them silent pictures. I wanted my family back home to see me up on that big screen in that movie house and know that I made it. I know, Belle. I can only imagine how hard you tried. Tell me what happened to you, please. I tried to tell my family a whole bunch of times, especially after, you know, after. No, I'm sorry. I don't know what you mean. I've got plenty of time. Tell me what you mean when you say the after time. Perhaps you'd better start at the beginning when you decided to come to Hollywood and be famous. Well, my papa always said I had stars in my eyes and that I was somehow never going to come to any good. I don't know why he always treated me so bad, but he told me that over and over, you know, that I was no good. But I didn't believe it. Mama said I was such a pretty young thing and so smart. How could Papa see me so different? Like, I reckon he didn't really see me at all. Mama said it was probably because he done wanted a boy, and I was just another useless girl. It weren't my fault I was a girl. I guess when you ain't wanted, when you ain't worth nothing, you gotta go prove you're somebody. I love them picture shows. Them beautiful ladies, they looked so beautiful, like they was having so much fun. They looked happy. And I ain't never really been happy. So I saved up all my egg money and set out for Los Angeles from my tiny town in Iowa. I just knew there was more to life than farming and raising livestock. I got me a one-way bus ticket to L.A. That's what they called it, to Los Angeles, so I could be in them picture shows on that their big screen. Then lots of folks would love me, and I'd finally be somebody. And Papa and Mama would be proud of me. Then he'd be darn proud that I was a girl now, not a useless girl. The defiance in her tone showed her stubborn resolve to make something of herself. And Belle, what happened when you got there? What year was it? What time was it like for you when you were there? Belle looked at me and then looked around her apartment as if it still looked like it did then. She sat down on what would have been the only chair she had in the room back then. Then she looked up at me with such anguish. Very probably her lament was the same for thousands of other young ingenues who believed that they could become the next Mary Pickford or Greta Garbo. The years before the Depression were so hard, and it was especially difficult for single women to make a living. Hollywood must have looked so easy, so inviting. All you have to do is remember your lines, learn your marks, and you can become a star. There was not even that much acting to do with silent pictures. If only it were all that simple. I remember getting off the bus and feeling the pure glory of that warm California sun. I remember it was April 1925. My dream had come true. I was here. I had started. I found me a boarding house to stay in, and then I quickly got me a job waiting tables. I had heard that if you waited tables, and that maybe a big-time producer director would see you, you could be discovered. That was my dream. There were other young women there living at that boarding house, and one of them asked me if I could act. I said yes, even though I couldn't really act. She said I was lucky because she went on a casting call and she was told that she couldn't act and she didn't get the part. So I got me another job to pay for acting lessons. I couldn't afford many, but I figured they were silent pictures and I had watched so many of them pretty girls just mouthing their lines. After a couple of weeks, I felt like I could handle it. So I kept the second job, and then I got a tiny, really cheap apartment. I worked my jobs so that I could go on all the casting calls, and I'd be okay. Did you get many casting calls? How did you find out about them? Them studios posted the jobs they had for extra folks and even real actresses on a bulletin board outside of the entrance of the studios. I studied those posts every day. I went on every casting call. It was all so exciting, I guess, until it wasn't. Well, I just wasn't prepared for it, that's all. What weren't you prepared for, Belle? I wasn't prepared for all them producers or directors or whatever they was called. I don't know. Nobody warned me. I didn't know what to do. Her face contorted into a pout. Something had happened to her. I had a sick feeling I knew what it was. I remember that on one casting call, there was this producer said he liked my face, and he called me over. He said that I might be right for the character he was reading for, even though nobody was ever going to hear my voice. I was so excited, I couldn't breathe, you know? Finally, somebody saw me. I was somebody. I couldn't believe it. That their director said there was a love scene in the movie, and he wanted to see if I could act. He told me to come back later that day so I could rehearse with him. And did you go back and rehearse with him? Yeah, I did. I put on the only real pretty dress I had. Another actress did my hair and put on a little makeup for me, so you know, so that I would look professional-like, and I was there right on time, ready to rehearse. And he was there working on scripts or something, and he had me wait for a while before he called me in. He told his secretary she could leave. She looked at me real funny, not friendly-like at all. I couldn't understand why. I felt a little uncomfortable being there alone with him, but I wanted that part so my papa would be proud of me. What happened? He finally called me in, and I stood there for a few minutes till he looked up at me. Then he told me to turn around real slow-like. He wanted to see how I moved, so I did that. Then he handed me a script page and asked me to read it out loud to him. I was confused because I thought all I had to do was mouth the lines. But he said that real soon, sound was coming to the movies and actresses would have to talk out loud, and he wanted to see how I sounded. He said he wanted to see if I was everything the part required. I remember he nodded his head at all the stuff I did and said I was doing a real great job. Then he handed me another script page, and it was a love scene. I had been standing all this time. He says that he'll run lines with me if I just sit on the little couch he has right there. So I did. I sat on the couch, and then he sat next to me. The scene called for a kiss. I remember those moving pictures and people just barely kissed, so I figured that's all he wanted. But it wasn't all he wanted. He pulled me toward him and I resisted. He said movies were changing and that love scenes were becoming more and more visible, especially with talkies, as he called them. He had to see how I would react in a real love scene with a real man. He pulled me to him, this time real slow, and I let him do this. And he then began to put his arms around me. I felt myself pull away from him because something felt wrong about this. He was a short, fat, ugly man. His breath smelt like cigars and coffee, and his black hair was all greasy. He told me I had to run my fingers through his hair because that's what the scene called for. I was getting more and more nervous, like you know. But I did what he asked. Then he said I had to really kiss him, not fake it, but really give him a kiss on his lips. Well, I ain't never kissed a boy, even back home, so I gave him a peck on his fat cheek. He just laughed out loud. I felt real stupid, and I was getting a scared feeling in my stomach. He took his time, and he pulled me to him, and he made me do this over and over till I got it right. Then he made me kiss him over and over, and he made the kissing part more forceful-like. He was a strong man. I reckon he done kissed me maybe 10 times, and he made me start over and over where he pulled me to him and he kissed me. Then there was the final time that he pulled me to him and he kissed me real hard that time, harder than before. I tried to pull away, but he was so fast. He turned me around and laid me down on this big brown couch, and he said he wanted to look at me lying there. Then before I knew it, he took his pants down like that before, and then he took terrible advantage of me. I believed that your first time was supposed to be special, not violent like this, not make me want to vomit. I didn't think it would be over. I just didn't think it would ever be over. He smelled a BO. I wanted to cry when he was doing this to me, and then I couldn't stop crying. He got mad at me and yelled at me to shut up. Then he screamed at me to get out, that I was a terrible actress, and I wasn't right for his part. I remember thinking that all I had to do to be an actress was mouth my lines. If only that was all you had to do. What this young woman never quite realized, sitting on the farm in her flat Midwestern state, was that you also had to navigate through the male-dominated politics of the studio system. You especially had to gauge how to handle yourself in the offices of the barely concealed rapists that would describe many a Hollywood producer and director. These men routinely took reckless and disgusting advantage of these hopeful young women. Belle, how did you recover from this rape? Did you report him, tell the police, or tell anyone? I already knew the answer, but I had to ask her, had to help her get her story out. No, I didn't tell nobody. I felt like I didn't know who I was, that the Belle who walked into that office died in there, and another girl walked out. I went home and I took a bath and I cried for a long time. I didn't go on auditions for a week, and then I got up my courage and I tried again. I told myself that it would be different in the future. I understood how things work now. Were things different for you, Belle? Did you finally get parts? No, it wasn't parts I got. It took me a while to realize that what I got was pregnant. I didn't think you could get pregnant with the very first time you had sex. I think I was denying it at first. I was pretending I was just getting fat. I wore big clothes to hide my belly. I didn't know many people, didn't have many friends. Certainly not friends I could ask for help. I was one of them girls who got in trouble. I was so ashamed. In trouble was that cruel label used to describe a girl pregnant outside of wedlock. I lost my figure real fast. I knew there was such a thing as getting rid of the baby, but I didn't know who I was going to ask. I had no money to pay anyway. What was I going to do? My two jobs barely paid for my apartment and the little bit of food I allowed myself. I still wanted to go for auditions, but as the weeks and months passed, my belly began to show, and I had to stop going to the studios. I counted myself lucky to still have my waitressing jobs. Then the baby came, and labor was real hard. I was so alone. I took a cab to the hospital and had the baby. I left as soon as I could. When they handed me this pink wiggling little girl, my heart sank instead of being filled with delight. I named her Sarah Jane, but I don't know why I picked that name. Maybe after Sarah Bernhardt? I didn't know how to nurse no baby. There was no crib, no baby clothes. This wasn't ever going to work. The baby cried and cried. I couldn't stand the crying. I bought rat poison and fed it to the baby until she died, which wasn't very long. I killed my baby. I told myself I would have been a terrible mother anyway. I had always been a good Christian girl. And now I had killed my baby. I worked real hard to get that pregnancy weight off my body so I would look good in clothes again. I went to more auditions. I was getting better and better at this acting stuff, learning lines and understanding what the studios wanted. But always, there was the sex part with the director, producer, or casting director. I began to wonder who I was. I never did figure out how to meet with these men and not get taken advantage of, you know, in that private way. You ain't gonna believe this, but I got pregnant 3 more times. I had a baby every year for 4 years. I named them JoJo, Frank, and Baby May. And I poisoned each of them right after they were born because I couldn't ever go back home to the Midwest with them. My family would never have accepted me with 4 bastard kids from 4 different fathers. Oh, my God, the scandal. Oh, my mama and papa would have disowned me. I'd have been an outcast in my small town. My children weren't never going to be accepted. Everyone would have called them bastards. I didn't want to go home a failure, still good for nothing, as my papa believed. I reckoned that giving up and denying my dream was not something I could face at least the first 3 times. Sometimes I felt horrible for what I did. Sometimes I simply didn't feel nothing at all. When I thought about how I murdered my own kids. It was almost as if sometimes, I guess I was plumb separated from that murderous woman I had become, almost. I disposed of their little bodies by wrapping them in old newspaper and putting them in a trash can down the street. I'd slip out in the middle of the night so that no one could see me, could see how horrible a mother I was. After killing the 4th child, Baby May, something inside me died with her. I gave up on my dream, my being an actress. I took the last of my waitressing money and I bought a ticket home. I cried that whole bus trip back to Iowa. I didn't know who I was anymore. I sure weren't no Belle Lawrence actress. I went back to being Becky Sue Jones. Becky Sue or Belle, what did you decide to tell your family on that long ride home? I imagined that trip was her final descent into downheartedness, dream shattered, body violated, sense of self completely destroyed. How was I going to face my family, especially after I told them about all of my auditions? They were so excited for me. What could I say? I knew I would face the shame of having failed at making my Hollywood dream come true, but I plumb didn't have it in me to face another producer in his damn couch. I couldn't bear to have another baby and kill another little body. I thought long and hard about what to tell my mom and papa, but when I got there, I walked in the house and said I was home for good. I reckon there was something about the way I said it that they didn't ask me no more questions. No one ever mentioned Hollywood again. Becky Sue, how did you live the rest of your life? I never got married. I couldn't bear to be with another man, no matter how kind. I didn't deserve to be happy. I spent the rest of my life taking care of my parents and the farm. Hard to believe that them 4 short years destroyed my life. I am a failure. God's punishing me because I got away with murder. No one ever found out it was me who killed them babies. One day, my breast got real sore. Not the way your breasts get achy when you're pregnant, but a terrible kind of pain. But I waited and waited until these horrible oozing sores were all over my breasts. A doctor said I had breast cancer. I passed away before my mama died. Becky Sue, can you tell me why you named each of your babies? Wouldn't it have been easier if you hadn't named them? Do you think I wanted to give a name to them babies I killed? I had to give the nurse a name for their birth certificates. She kept asking me what was I planning on calling them. I had no choice. I still remember their names. They haunt me even now that I'm dead. Maybe her cancer was the metaphoric, relentless nagging of her conscience, sickening her to the point of death. Breast cancer can represent a deep emotional sickness, guilt, or shame made manifest by an unwanted growth of some type of tumor. So, Becky Sue, if you died in Iowa, why are you still here in this apartment in Hollywood, California? I reckon that I didn't feel welcome at home. Once I died and left my rotten body, I didn't feel comfortable watching my parents grieve me. I didn't rightly deserve anyone's tears. Next I know, I'm back here in this here apartment remembering those horrible 4 years. Those dirty, cruel years that destroyed my whole life. I weren't never the same after that. When you found yourself back here, Becky, did you notice any other ghosts? No, I'm here alone. Ain't nobody here with me. But Becky Sue wasn't the only ghost I could see there, although for now, she didn't need to know that. Her physical and emotional suffering shut her out from all other souls, living and dead. I quietly brought in an angel of transition to escort her to the heaven world. I wasn't quite prepared for her reaction when she saw this glorious being. Hey, is that an angel standing there? Yes, this angel is for you to guide you to the heaven world. Go ahead and take the shawl she's offering you. No, ma'am. I don't be deserving no pretty angel. Or that there golden shawl. No, I murdered my babies, all 4 of them. Ain't no good ever coming to me. No way. I read the Bible. I know I am going to hell. My dear, God welcomes all his children home, even you. And it doesn't matter what you think you deserve. This angel is taking you across that light bridge. It's all right now. There is help and hope for you. I said this as I nodded to the angel to take her home. She looked up at the angel and tears flowed from her eyes in an unending stream of grief and perhaps the relief that she could finally leave the hell of her shattered dreams and the murderous shadow that haunted her personality. She crossed over without another word. Is she gone now? I turned to the tiny, tiny voice that asked this question. Yes, your mother's gone now. You're safe. I gazed at the four babies, each laying on the bed, with faces contorted in pain, laying there where they died. A horrified shudder ran through me as I looked at them. Immediately, I brought in four angels to pick up and wrap each little body in a blanket of healing light. Because these warming blankets came from the heaven world, they began to restore each baby's soul and remove the wrenching pain they felt in their tiny stomachs. I could feel them relax as the warmth seeped into the inner reaches of their souls. Then the angels turned beaming smiles toward each tiny face and began to hum sweetly as they gently rocked each baby. Why did she do this to us? I could not tell which child was which. They all looked almost identical, so I addressed them all. Could you all see her? Yes, we could, but she couldn't see us. We didn't want her to see us either in case she would try to kill us again. Do you know why we were killed? Is that what being unwanted means? That your mother kills you? When we were inside of her, we could feel that she didn't want us. I cannot answer for the cruel actions of your mother. Right now, what I can do is to offer all of your little bodies the healing light of these divine golden blankets and the gentleness of these angels. Are you all feeling better? Let me assure you that although your mother may not have wanted you, God loves you and wants you. It's time to return home to the Father. I gave the angels the nod, and they lovingly carried these precious babies into the light of the divine. The epilogue. Becky Sue's four newborns were haunting the condo, since this is where each of them died. Two of them lived only a few days. The last children died barely a few hours after returning home from the hospital. We will never know the emotional pain and physical trauma these children experienced because they were each so profoundly unloved. Conceived and raped, they were unloved and unwanted from the very moment of conception. Not wanted. What a terrible energy to give to any child for 9 long months. They never knew even a moment of compassion. I cannot comprehend their individual pain or the karma of such a birth. Surely Becky Sue would have known what that felt like, since she too had been an unwanted child. However, it is not up to us to judge her. The murderer's babies had no idea what to do after death. They stayed there, crying for decades of mortal time. However, for these babies, there was no time. There was only the moment immediately following their death, as they slipped out of their bodies. It is knowing that they are now in the heaven world that enables me to continue to face these poignant situations. I took a deep breath and returned to my work. I systematically cleared the energetic echo of this actress and her dead children from this condo. The walls will no longer be able to talk to any psychic or fill the spaces with the energy of Becky Sue's tragic life and the deaths she caused. My clients were pleased that their condo was now free of these dead souls and the energy of murder and despair. How simple that sentence. Yet how powerful that service is to those souls who now reside in the heaven world. And this story is from Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, Volume 3. Be sure to look at Volumes 1, 2, and 3, where all 63 poignant stories will melt your heart.
Thank you for taking a walk with us on the karmic path today. We appreciate your listening and would love to hear from you. Please send all questions to questions@thekarmicpath.com.